Welcome to the Beetlebugs Podcast. Yay!
As people follow clues and take off both their shoes and walk on back to 69. Every road dreams out of life. The sergeant on the pink dark side. The piper travels through the sky. Out here. And
Welcome back to another episode of the Beetlebugs Podcast, a podcast about the greatest rock and roll band in the world, ever. I'm your host, Aisha.
And I'm Jesse. And we are really proud to present our 10th episode of this podcast series.
10 episodes? I can't believe we've reached 10 episodes. And we've got more listeners in even more locations from around the world.
That's right. So you might remember a couple of episodes ago, we mentioned we had listeners from the UK, the UAE, United States, Syria, Turkey, Ireland, France.
That's right. And now we've added listeners from Canada, Belgium, Japan, Mexico, Brazil, Costa Rica, Indonesia, Bangladesh, South Korea, and Ukraine.
That is so cool. Looks like we've got a bit of a South American contingent of followers. I wonder if Maradona listens to us, or maybe even Pele.
Okay, let's not talk about football now. I think that's another podcast. And now, it's time for the news. Recording of the Beatles is at the centre of a court battle between Universal Music Group and the family of George Emmerich. George Emmerich was a sound engineer at the Abbey Road Studios, and he taped a demo of the band, including an early version of Love Me Do. EMI were not happy with the quality of the audio, and so ordered to have it destroyed. Emmerich instead kept it until his death in 2018. Now, Universal Music Group, who took over EMI in 2012, want the tape returned. The family are arguing. Well, basically, they're saying finders keepers. The tape is valued around £6 million. And that's all for now from the BBC, the Beetlebugs Corporation. Join us again for more breaking news.
Finders keepers.
I think that's a reasonable argument.
Well, I suppose when 6 million quid is up for grabs, you've got to think of something.
The start of 1966 saw the Beatles do something they had never done before. They took a 3-month break after years of touring. That break did them the world of good, and they came back to record their 7th studio album.
The Beatles were now basking in the critical acclaim that greeted the release of the album, Rubber Soul. The band were now a more mature, confident and well-rounded group of musicians. With the creative shackles now thrown off, the band looked to build on the success of Rubber Soul and to continue down the path of artistic exploration and expression. They would soon find that path fraught with pitfalls.
The Beatles were a huge success in America, and their US record label, Capitol Records, would issue their own version of the band's albums. It was well known that the band didn't really care for the way their album releases were being handled. In June 1966, Capitol Records released an album called Yesterday and Today, and all hell broke loose.
The cover to the album had a grinning band dressed in white butcher's coats, holding decapitated plastic dolls and raw meat. Retailers and radio stations reacted with fury and dismay, with many promising not to stop the album. Capitol Records had printed 750,000 copies of the album and had already sent out 60,000 copies to radio stations, members of the media, and marketing outlets. The record label were forced to recall all 60,000 copies, with the offending image being replaced with something more in tune with American sensibilities. There was much speculation around what the album cover actually meant. What were the band trying to say? Some thought it was a veiled criticism of Capitol Records butchering their album releases. But John Lennon made it clear that America's war in Vietnam was behind the controversial album cover. Paul McCartney called the band's critics soft. John Lennon went further. If the public can accept something as cruel as the war, they can accept this cover, Lennon said.
I guess you can't argue with that. 2 gold stars for John. But if the Beatles thought that would be the last of their problems, they would be badly mistaken. On a tour of the Philippines, the band were invited to a breakfast with the nation's first lady, Imelda Marcos. Brian Epstein politely declined the invitation, but the Marcos family were not used to anyone saying no to them. With riots erupting around them, the band made a quick escape. They left the Philippines and headed to their first trip to India.
With the Beatles drawing heavily on Eastern mysticism, the band's trip to India was a significant one. George Harrison had already begun sitar lessons with Ravi Shankar, and those lessons would become evident on future projects. No sooner had the band returned home than another controversy erupted. In an interview with the London Evening Standard, Lennon spoke about the band's fame, the hysteria they induced in fans around the world, and how those fans perceived them. "We're more popular than Jesus now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity," Lennon mused. The interview barely warranted a mention in the UK, but nearly 6 months later, when the article was reprinted in a US teen magazine, social and religious conservatives, as well as the Ku Klux Klan, were riled into action by what they perceived to be Lennon's offensive comments. Lennon argued that he was merely commenting on how people viewed the band, not how they viewed themselves. "If I'd said television was more popular than Jesus, I might have got away with it."
Despite the uproar, the Beatles were all set for yet another tour of America. The new album, called Revolver, was released on the 5th of August. But this tour would be different. No songs from the new album would be played, and the band had to have specially made speakers because the noise made by fans was so loud they couldn't even hear themselves perform. But it still didn't do the trick. The fans were just too loud. But what had really changed was the band itself. They wanted to showcase and develop their music, and they couldn't do that when the fans were screaming so loud that nobody could hear them play. And so, the August tour of 1966 would be the last one. And on the 29th of August in 1966, the Beatles played their final concert in San Francisco. They had played over 1,400 shows around the world.
So come on then, it's track listing time.
Revolver had 14 songs on the album, 7 songs on each side. On side 1, 1, Taxman, 2, Eleanor Rigby, 3, I'm Only Sleeping, 4, Love You Too. 5. Here, Then, Everywhere. 6. Yellow Submarine. And 7. She Said, She Said.
And on side 2, Good Day Sunshine and Your Bird Can Sing, For No One, Dr. Robert, I Want to Tell You, Got to Get to You into My Life, and Tomorrow Never Knows. Okay, so we've established that this album is very different to the early albums. Tell me about some of the songs and, you know, which ones are your favourite?
Yes, this album is very different, but it's different in the best possible way. I love this album. There are lots of various different sounds on the album. And when you hear this album, you can really see how they inspired future bands like The Jam and Oasis. And the songs are just so different from one another. I mean songs like Taxman, Eleanor Rigby, and Yellow Submarine on the same album. How crazy!
It's true. Those songs are so different to one another. And it's interesting that you mentioned how they influenced bands that came later, like The Jam. Shall we listen to one example?
Let's do it.
Okay, so here's the opening track on the album called Taxman.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for
And here is a song written by the Mod Father himself, Paul Weller of The Jam, called Start.
It's not important for you to know my name, nor I to know yours.
And here's another song from the Revolver album called Tomorrow Never Knows.
A song called Falling Down.
Wow, just listen to that.
Paul Weller and the Gallagher brothers probably wouldn't have produced their amazing work if it hadn't been for the Beatles. So, you're welcome, Paul, Noel and Liam.
Okay, so what are your favourite songs on the album?
Well, I love Yellow Submarine. It's just such a fun song. It's the kind of song you sing when you're on a road trip. In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea. And he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed up to the sun till we found a sea of green. And we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine, a yellow submarine, a yellow submarine.
We all dream of a team of Carragers, a team of Carragers, a team of Carragers.
What? That's not the song. What are you saying?
Oh, sorry. It's just that the Premier League has just restarted and I think I just got a bit overexcited. Sorry. What were the words again?
We all live in the yellow submarine. Yellow submarine, we all live.
You mean they actually let Ringo near a microphone?
Ah, bless him. But his voice works on this song. I mean, I don't think he would have worked on the song yesterday.
Very true.
But I also really like I'm Only Sleeping. I think of that song every day when I'm at school. But my absolute favourite is Eleanor Rigby.
I look at all the lovely people. I look at all the lovely people. Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there.
What a song. This is the perfect example of the band's true musical genius. They touch on themes that pop bands at the time weren't supposed to go near. Loneliness, social isolation, and death. The song showcased the band's development both musically and emotionally. As well as the more serious themes in the song, the band once again used classical instruments in beats and tempos not heard before. Classical composer Howard Goodall commented that the band's songs were of such a quality that only Mozart can match in European musical history. The Bee Gees and the band America also cited Eleanor Rigby as a major influence on their work.
It's time for another fun fact. When Paul McCartney sat down to write the song, he first used the name Father McCartney instead of Father McKenzie. But after discussing the song with the rest of the band, Paul worried that maybe people would think that the sad figure in the song was his father. So he changed the name to Father McKenzie. Good choice, Paul. Father McCartney sounds a tiny bit weird.
The album received widespread critical acclaim. The acclaim continues to this day. In 1999, the album was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. The 2000 edition of Colin Larkin's all-time top 1000 albums of all time, the album was ranked number one, just ahead of Sgt. Pepper's. In 2001, VH1 awarded the album the Greatest Album of All Time award, and Rolling Stone magazine ranked the album in the top three greatest albums of all time.
I think we can safely say that Revolver was a pretty decent effort from the boys. Gold star for all four.
All the lonely people, but do they all be loved?
And that is where we leave the story, The Beatles, for this episode. Join us again next week as we continue to chart the story of the world's greatest ever rock and roll band.
We hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join us again on the next episode. If you do like our show, then please, please, pretty please subscribe to our show. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and just about anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you again soon. Bye.